This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Economic disparities in the South are similar to those in the rest of the country, but in the South, it's more difficult for young people to move up the economic ladder than it is in other regions. A new report ties many of those disparities to limited access to employment programs and higher education. The report is called The State of the South, and here to tell us where North Carolina fits into the picture is David Dodson. He's the president of the Durham-based research firm MDC, which published the report. It does so every 2 years. The latest one just came out. David Dodson, welcome to The State of Things.
Thank you very much. A delight to be here.
Also with us, Farrell Guillory, who contributed to the report. He's a professor in the UNC School of Journalism and Mass Communication and faculty member of the Department of Public Policy. Farrell Guillory, welcome back.
Thank you.
You wrote the introduction to this, so let me start with you. What is the state of the South in terms of economic mobility, and where does North Carolina fit?
Well, the major focus of our data collection, and let me say the data and much of the work of this report was produced by Allison Zant, a Carolina graduate and a really bright core of young millennials over at MDC. What we did, what Allison pulled together, she took the Forbes magazine ranking of the major metropolitan areas in the South, those that rank in the top 100 in the country, and looked at the ones that were best for business, and then also looked at mobility and some other data. So let me just give you the North Carolina ones. Raleigh ranks first on Forbes' business list. But in a ranking of mobility, we in this metro area rank 94th in the country. Best for business, but among the lowest in the ability of people in the lower income brackets to move up the economic ladder. In Raleigh, there's been a 96% increase in people living in poverty over the past 5 years. Let me give you Greensboro. Greensboro ranks 54th on the Forbes Best for Business list, about halfway among major metros. But it's 95th in mobility. And Greensboro's had a 77% increase in poverty over the past 4 years. And so our report builds and comments and tries to unpack that paradox that some of our highest flying cities aren't pulling people up along with them.
I'm going to ask David Dodson what some of those findings are, some of the reasons for that lack of mobility, and then what's being done in various places. But I want to ask you one more question, Farrell, about what you mean by mobility. When you say you rank 96th in mobility, what are you saying?
Well, mobility means, in colloquial terms, the American dream, that each generation moves up in income and in social standing, class standing from the generation before. So the mobility rank was calculated from the Equality of Opportunity Project, and it's a measure of whether a child in the bottom quintile, the bottom fifth of household income, could move up to the middle class. And so it's hard to go, it's hard on the radio to put
right.
a chart up and flash what it looks like. But
your chances are much less in those cities that rank at the bottom of getting out of that lowest economic class.
Right. That's right. And that's something that we need to be worried about. And what the report calls, and David can explain it much further, is we've got to have a purposeful effort to begin pulling high school kids, college kids, disconnected youth into the mainstream of our economy, and we have to have purposeful policies and strategies, to do that.
All right, David, so what are the barriers? Why are cities, and maybe you can tell us about Durham as well. We heard about Raleigh and Greensboro. How does Durham rank in all of these? And then what are the barriers? Why are people stuck at the bottom in these cities?
Well, Durham is a fascinating exemplar of one category of southern communities, the places that have vigorous economic dynamism a lot of opportunity, and yet a significant number of young people, and our focus here is on youth and young adults, I should say, significant number of young people born at the bottom of the income distribution who never get past what I would say a lower middle income earnings level. So they live among dynamism but don't move far and connect to that dynamism. What's part of the issue? One big piece is the rate at which these young people enter, persist, and complete some degree after high school, post-secondary attainment. You've heard for a long time that the average new job is going to require some education beyond high school. Not a college degree, necessarily, but it could be certification, an HVAC certification, a Cisco certification, something that the marketplace can say, this person knows how to do a job. We don't have enough young people born poor and disadvantaged who get through high school and get that post-secondary credential. That's one thing. The other thing we found from work that we and others are doing in Durham is young people born in economic and social isolation often don't have clues about what the workplace requires. You and I probably grew up surrounded by people who went to work, and we got formal and informal clues about what work meant. But if you live in a neighborhood where your parents haven't had employment, where you don't see people getting up and going to work every day, getting those clues, those signals about how do I persist, how do I find a job, what are the expectations, those aren't there. So those are the clues that tell us what a young person what to persist for. So we have on the what we call the supply side, not enough people persisting, young people, toward a post-secondary credential, which is the new finish line for employability. We also, on the other hand, don't have the information and connections flowing back from employers to say, young folks, if you expect to work, here's what you need to know how to do. Here's what we expect you will be skilled at. And so there's a disconnect. What we find in solutions in State of the South are communities rolling up their sleeves, despite the poisonous partisan rhetoric that we hear around election time. People of goodwill are rolling up their sleeves to try to make those connections between supply and demand and take those kind of opportunity lines back into low-income neighborhoods.
We're talking about disparities in economic mobility today on The State of Things. David Dodson is with me, president of MDC here in Durham, just produced a new report on that very subject. Farrell Guillory from UNC Chapel Hill is with us as well. So, but this is a comparative report as well. What you described sounds like it should be true everywhere. Why are some cities better than others? Why are some cities worse than others? What's working where these disparities are not as large?
So you ask why some cities are better and worse. Some places are dynamic. We looked at 9 communities across the South. There are places like Houston, Greenville, South Carolina, Durham, and Charlotte that have economic vitality. We also looked at some remote rural places, and we have some in the listening area of this station that don't have economic dynamism. They have a different set of challenges. So part of the differences have to do with what's the underlying economy. But the big piece is, what does the leadership look like? Are economic leaders sitting down with educational leaders, community leaders, and young people themselves to figure out where the leakage points are in the pathways from education to employment?
Can you tell if our education system is robust enough, if it's good enough as it is now, that if we would just connect kids to the job possibilities and get them more job ready, our education system, public education system, is good enough right now, or does it need some help?
There's room for improvement everywhere, and Farrell wants to jump in.
Frank, we can debate the education system for a long time. Clearly, our public school systems, particularly in our big metro areas, are probably as good or even better than they've ever been in the aggregate. But schools are forever trying to keep up with the advance of knowledge, with changes in the economy. One of the things that we point out that's very distressing in this report is all across the South, North Carolina included, we've been through a period of disinvestment, of building, you know, of reducing spending, and that's a big issue, you know, in the election in this state, too. And we are not going to get where we need to be through a pattern of disinvestment. But at the same time, we also need, outside of the education system, efforts to create more jobs, to stimulate the economy, to do public works projects and connect young adults to those projects.
Well, I tell you what, Farrell, let me ask David in about the 30 seconds I have left to maybe summarize a little bit about what those kinds of projects look like, the connection projects.
Well, in places like Houston, Greenville, and Durham, I'll talk about Durham, they're creating tables where employers can sit down with educators to say, here, on the employer's case, here's what we need and expect of an entry-level worker, and can have what we would call unprecedented conversations with educators so that young people can be prepared for what employers demand. That sounds really simple, but we're not organized in most communities to do that, and that's what the benchmark communities we're seeing are figuring out how to do around the state of the South.
I want to thank you both for being on the program. David Dodson, president of MDC in Durham. It distributes the State of the South report every 2 years. And Farrell Guillory, a fellow at MDC and a professor at the UNC School of Journalism. Thank you both for being on the program.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you.
Coming up next, a new memoir about growing up between cultures. You'll hear it on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.